Sports Radio Network proudly presents This Week in Rays Baseball.
Drilled to center field and deep. Back on it is Eaton. To the track. To the wall. It's gone! Evan Longoria with a two-run home run to straightaway center. And he gives the Rays a 6-4 lead here in the ninth.
Coming up, we'll recap the action from this past week, take a look around Major League Baseball, and sit down for in-depth interviews with the biggest names in the game.
The 2-2 now. Check swing on the slider, strike three. Chris Archer jumps off the mound and bounces his way to the dugout.
Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to our show. Good morning. Today on the program, we'll visit with Jake Faria, discuss his first few starts in the majors. Doug Wechter of Fox Sports Sun will stop on by. We'll introduce you to the newest Rays player in Trevor Plouffe, chat with Charlotte Stonecrabs All-Star Brett Sullivan, discuss the AL East with Rich Dubroff, and much more. We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and our feature guest this week is Jake Faria. Jake, first of all, congrats on your terrific start. What has been most special to you about the way your big league career has started?
I think the thing that's been most special for me is just the way that the guys have embraced me as a member of the team. Just it's made me feel really welcome. I haven't really had to feel like I've had to walk on eggshells or anything. I've just kind of been trying to keep my head down and go about my business. Everybody's been great, and it's made it a really easy transition.
In terms of the on-field, is there a moment, a batter you faced, something that sticks out more than any other to this point?
It was in the first game. I threw a pitch to Todd Frazier, and it was a good pitch, and he swung it at it and kind of gave me like a nod, like, oh, that's a nice pitch, and that kind of reassured, like, hey, like, you have the stuff to get these guys out. And then actually after the game, he came up to me and in the parking lot and like shook my hand and told me, you know, congrats on the win and the debut. So that was really cool, and that kind of like I said, kind of made me really feel like, hey, look, like, that's a good hitter, you know. And he just kind of, you know, gave you that reassurance, like, hey, you have the stuff to compete up here. So,
and you've had, obviously, when you were in the minors, some really good moments. I mean, you had a 17 win season, you kind of climbed the ladder. But is there any reason why you think now it's maybe clicked to another level? Is there something that you're doing differently, or something that's kind of just advanced your game?
I think it was just going back to the basics. I think last year I tried to get too fancy. I tried to repeat 2015, and that was really hard to do. And it's just a bad way to go about it, try to duplicate a season instead of create a new season. So I think this year is just kind of get back to the basics of just pitching, not even my game in particular, just pitching and jumping ahead, putting guys away early, and I think that's what's really, really made the difference between this year and last year.
I think, you know, what you just said was kind of noted in a post-game interview you had, and I think it was somewhat refreshing. You know, you were asked about, you know, your strategy and the way you handle things, and you said, look, I've been here long. I trust what the catcher puts down and what the pitching coach tells me is a scouting report, and it's kind of rare.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really note any particular instances where it's happened where a guy tries to come up and reinvent the wheel per se. But like I said, I'm just trying to, these guys have been here all year. They've been in the big leagues for a long time, and they know these hitters in and out. And the info that, you know, Jim Hickey brings to the table and, you know, how he relays it to us is just, it's invaluable. And, you know, I trust that info. I trust Dino, and even, I mean, Sucre too. I mean, Sucre's a big league catcher. I haven't thrown to him yet, but whenever I eventually do, I'll trust what he throws down because he's a big leaguer.
And I'm sure same with Wilson Ramos as well, as he's not too far from joining the Rays. You know, I think it's also been well documented. This has been an unbelievable month because of the fact that you got engaged. I mean, could you have imagined a better stretch personally, professionally, to put together all in one?
I don't think so. I don't think I could have imagined that it would all happen so close together. It's been awesome. It's tough to put into words how special it's been. And it's just been unbelievable. All the support from people, you know, just reaching out on Twitter saying, hey, congrats, and on both the engagement and, you know, getting to the big league. So it's been really cool.
What was the most unique congratulations you got regarding the baseball side of things, regarding the start of your career? Someone maybe you hadn't heard from or you didn't expect to hear from, or just the way they congratulated you?
I can't really. Yesterday, somebody, a couple of fans, brought me a rubber duck. So it's cool that people are kind of picking up on that. That's been kind of a ongoing. It's been subtle. It's been, you know, people here and there will send me one, but it was cool that they reached out on Twitter and told me that they had it. So I came out and signed for a bunch of people, and then they gave me the duck. So that was cool. But I think, like I said, it's just been the overwhelming amount of support from the Rays fans. I mean, it's a really good fan base. You know, on Twitter, it's been really good. I can't even put into words. Like I said, it's been really cool.
So let's get to the duck or ducks. How did that all start? I know there's been a Twitter handle that's been associated. Give me kind of the version of how this all began.
So the duck came into play in the fall of 2010. I was playing for the Seattle Mariners scout team, and me and my dad went to Arizona for a tournament there. And the hotel that we were staying at was directly across the street from the ballpark, the Padres and Mariners spring training facility. When we got there, the hotel had overbooked a ton of people. I looked on the ground, and they probably had like 40 or 50 goodie bags to, you know, kind of say, hey, we're sorry that this happened. So when they told us, they're like, hey, you know, here, your reservation is at a hotel in Surprise, which is about 10 miles away, and here's a goodie bag to say sorry for the mess up. And inside was a bunch of snacks and drinks and also the duck. So I ate all the edible stuff, and then the duck, I kind of just thought, okay, this is a cool little, you know, souvenir from this interesting start to a trip. So I threw it in my bat bag, and I completely forgot about it, that it was even there throughout the season. And then when I signed, I unpacked my bat bag, saw the duck, and then ended up taking it with me to the GCL. And I've had it every year but one. The one year I didn't have it was my first year in Princeton. I had like a 5+ ERA. I got hurt. I was on the DL for about 2 weeks, and it was an ugly year. In general, I ended up having to go to Instructs, and I had to stay an extra month because I got hurt in Instructs too. And then, so the next year I had it, and I've had it ever since. And the Twitter handle was started by some people that are season ticket holders here at the Trop, and they've built it to what it is now. And it's a cool little thing. They keep up on all the games and all my outings, and I get people from race fans from everywhere, from all over the place. I'll get like a little box, and I'll be like, I got you. Like, here's a duck from Kentucky, or here's a duck from, you know, wherever. So it's pretty cool.
So you carry just the one, or how many do you have then?
I carry just the one on me, but at home I have a nightstand next to my bed, and it's a bunch of different like cubbies, and one cubby is holding about 25, 30 ducks. So and I keep getting them. Like yesterday, I got the one. Anytime like family comes across one that's a little interesting, they'll keep it and then give it to me whenever they see me. So the collection is growing.
So the Twitter handle is Faria's Flock, right? And what's the most unique duck you have so far? What, do you have a favorite other than the one that obviously goes with you? And does it go on the road to all road trips too?
Yeah, it stays in my backpack. The only, it's actually, no, it's not, it's in my suitcase right now, but when I go to the ballpark on game day, it's in my backpack. But the most unique one, I had a couple friends of mine and Jessica's, they sent me one a couple years ago for Christmas. It's a gold duck. It's a Christmas ornament. That one's really cool. They've also sent me one. It's our friend, the people that I'm talking about, it's Seth Frankoff from the Cubs, his wife, Bess. She sent me one. It's all pink with like white polka dots. It's because I guess her favorite color is pink. So it's pretty, those are the two probably most unique ones. I really like the gold one because you can see it just shines right out of the Christmas tree.
So if we had like, if there was a Faria's Flock section and the K of Flock was, you know, you keep running K's with ducks on them, would that work or is that a little too much?
No, I mean, that's up to people that would want to get involved in that. I wouldn't mind at all. That'd actually be pretty cool, but that's up to, you know, people that would want to be involved in that.
All right, just throwing a marketing idea out there for the fans who are listening today. Hey, you mentioned your engagement too, and we kind of got, sidetracked or duck tracked, however you want to look at it. How did, tell me how the engagement happened. I mean, you've been with Jessica for how long now?
A little over 6 years now. So the funny thing is she came out to visit about a week and a half before I proposed. Maybe it was a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks. Right before she came out was when I, like, I think 2 days before she came out, I bought the ring. And it had to get size and everything. So she came, left. We went on the road. When she came back, I had picked up the ring, like, the day we got back from our road trip, or maybe the next day. And I ended up doing it. There's a botanical gardens on Duke's campus named Duke Gardens. And we had an off day that day. And it was actually our six-year anniversary that day. And I'd planned to do it there. I had the Bulls team photographer was hidden up in the trees, you know, out in the, you know, hidden away. And the toughest part of the day was getting her out of bed. She loves to sleep in, and I just couldn't get her awake. So I finally just, like, pushed her off the bed pretty much, and we went to breakfast and got, you know, ate breakfast, went to Duke Gardens. And the spot I had originally picked out, people were taking engagement photos at that one spot. So I, like, kind of, I texted the photographer, and when he looked down at me, and I, like, kind of, you know, pointed to there was another area I had scouted out maybe a week earlier, and I found, like, the perfect moment. And we have, like, this running joke of, you know, she would always tell me, like, oh, it's going to be 10 years before we're going to be together for 10 years before before we get engaged, you know, whatever. Cause it'd already been six, you know, it'd been a long time. So I just told her, I was like, oh, well, you know, it's not going to be that long. It's not going to be 10. And I got down on a knee and asked her, and she didn't even say yes at first. She was just so shocked. The first thing she asked me was who knows about this already? Like, who knows you're going to ask me? So then I was like, well, are you saying yes or no? And she, like, she finally said yes, and so it was cool. And then there was a bunch of people, like, you know, older, you know, old people, you know, walking around, you know, clapping, and they came up and told us all congratulations. So it was really nice.
You had a backup plan. It sounds like a smart pitcher who's always got a plan and a game of adjustments. You adjusted.
Yeah, there was a bunch of places that I had picked out just in case they were all taken. But the second one that I had picked out was nice and open, and so it was. It worked out great. It worked out really great.
And she's someone who played softball, right? How do you think that helps, just to be with someone who's been an athlete and helps you and understands what you go through?
It helps a lot, because she knows, like, if I have a bad day, if she knows when a certain game for me is a bad day. And if that game happens, she knows that I'm not going to be in a good mood, or I'm not going to be the happiest person that day. So she isn't... I think the best word I can think of is, like, she's not, like, offended at all if I'm just not in a good mood. She understands. And then she she knows the game really well, so it's easy to, like, be with somebody that I can sit there and talk baseball with, and she understands, you know, why certain things happen in the game that, you know, that do happen. So it's nice.
Were you always a baseball guy? I know you grew up 5 minutes from Angel Stadium, and if so, what really hooked you on the game? What memory do you have going to a big league park as a kid?
I have always been a baseball guy. I love football too. I only played 1 year of football in high school, but it's been baseball since age six. My biggest memory really is, I remember so we had season tickets to the Angels growing up, and I think it was 2005. It was one of the years that the Angels won the West, and they had a day game to start the playoffs, to start the ALDS. And my dad came and took me and my brother out of school so we could go watch the game. And that was awesome. Just, you know, he might not have taken that. We might have just not gone to school that day. You know, that was really cool. I have a lot of memories at that stadium. I remember opening day, they were playing Texas 1 year. Vladdy hit a home run his first at bat of the game. I remember him, he hit 9 RBIs in one game. I was there for that. So just a lot of memories at that stadium. And there's just something about the game that it's easy to fall in love with. I was talking to TC, our strength coach, yesterday, just about, you know, it's hard to say, but, like, seeing guys hit home runs is cool. I love seeing guys hit home runs. It's really fun. But, like, seeing guys that you grew up watching play the game, when they hit a home run, you turn into a fan again. You know, it's guys like, I remember watching Longo, Lomo, you know, those guys before I was a pro player. I was in, you know, high school, seeing these guys terrorizing the team that I grew up watching, you know, and and it's just you turn into that fan again. It's really cool.
Well, I think the fans of the Rays have enjoyed watching you so far and are becoming quickly fans of you, and continued success on and off the field, and we appreciate some time on This Week in Rays Baseball.
All right, thanks for having me, Neil.
It's Jake Faria. We continue right after this. You're listening to the Rays Baseball Network. Continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and time now to take a look at the week gone by, and it's been a pretty good week for the Rays. Joining me from Fox Sports Sun is Doug Wechter. Doug, thanks very much for joining us. The Rays have been really good at these rubber matches, and I guess they kind of need to finish off this homestand on a right note today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the series. Over the past 12 series, we've taken 8 of them, and you know, the Rays have just been playing so well over the course of the year. It's not anything flashy. We're not sweeping teams, but we're also not losing these series. And, you know, that's the big thing. In the first half of the season, you just don't want to be eliminated. And now that we're putting ourselves in a good situation going into All-Star break, looking to take another series here today against Baltimore, and, you know, we're in a good spot right now. We've got some guys coming back. Wilson Ramos just came back last night, looks healthy behind the plate, and he should be a big bat in this lineup. And, you know, good things are on the way.
The offense has not been the concern. The consistency of the starting pitching, maybe a little, or maybe the bullpen too, has been a little bit up and down. Well, let's start with Jake Odorizzi today. I mean, the home run ball has bitten him. 10 straight starts, he's given up one, and this is a Baltimore team that hit 3 homers yesterday.
Yeah, it's definitely something that Jake has to concentrate on. You know, obviously his pitching and scouting report on Jake is that he expands the zone vertically. And when you pitch up in the zone, you have to be effective. You have to set that pitch up, and you can't just throw up. You have to go up there for a purpose. You can't leave it belt high. You got to go above the hands. And Jake knows that. But as you said, Neil, I mean, 10 games in a row, he's given up a home run, and you got a Baltimore team that's known for the long ball. So today it'll be a good matchup. He's going to have to mix and match that changeup at times. And that third pitch, that slider, is going to have to come into play a little bit too. If he can get that slider in, especially behind in the count, and keep these guys off balance, I think he can go deep into this game and give our Rays a good shot to win.
Chris Tillman on the other side has been anything but Chris Tillman-esque, and I guess the Rays are hoping that they can put up some big numbers, make it a lot easier for Jake, because, you know, the Orioles starting pitching has been their big issue this year.
Well, if you remember, before yesterday, the Orioles had gone 20 straight games giving up 5-plus runs. I mean, that stat is insane to me. And, you know, a lot of it is Chris Tillman has not done his job, and neither have most of the starting pitchers. Outside of Dylan Bundy, this staff has really struggled. And if you get to the starting pitcher and you get to the bullpen that's not their A bullpen, then you're putting yourself in a great position to win against this Orioles team. The problem is if you let that starter go deep into the game and they get into their A bullpen, you know, that's going to be a tough game and a tough task to ask of our offense. So hopefully we can get to Tillman early today, and we can get the win today and get this series.
Speaking of the A bullpen, for the Rays, you take who is the A bullpen outside of Alex Colomé? I think that's kind of the big question right now. Can you figure out the 7th and 8th innings if you get a good 6th?
I think that's a great question, and I think that's a question that, you know, Kevin Cash and Jim Hickey are still trying to figure out. Chase Whitley's put up some good innings. Tommy Hunter's done well in the past. I think each of those guys can go on a run long term and, you know, possibly in the back end of this bullpen do well. But, you know, when you got a guy like Alvarado going in there and he's so young, you can almost expect him to be hit or miss at times. Jumbo has definitely struggled at times. Farquhar has struggled at times. So, yeah, right now that is a big question mark on this team. Going into the season, we thought the same thing. You know, who's going to get the ball to Colomé? Colomé has done so well. We just got to bridge a gap from our starters to him, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
And that's why I think when Brad Boxberger, we were expecting him to be activated this weekend, and then his oblique tightens up, and you're going, okay, so when is he coming back? Because I think having him and healthy would be a big boon to the pen.
Brad Boxberger's put together some great years for the Rays, but you say that, that's been a little while ago, and in this game, it's what have you done for me lately? And, you know, honestly, Brad's not had a great season last year. He's been injured off and on, so yeah, he would be a great addition to this bullpen if we can get him back healthy, but it just doesn't seem like he's healthy right now, and that is a big blow because we were hoping that he can come in here and inject some energy into this bullpen and, you know, help bridge that gap to Colomé. But as of right now, you know, he goes down with another injury. It's very frustrating to see. I'm sure it's frustrating for him as well. And, you know, we're just going to have to wait and see if any moves are made. And, you know, possibly the trade deadline's coming up as well. So you never know what's going to happen. It's baseball, and it's a lot of fun to watch.
Indeed. what has happened to this point is the offense has outscored any mistakes the pitching or the defense has made. I mean, you look at 2-3-4 in the lineup between the way Longo's starting to hit, Dickerson, Morrison, and even Souza at number five. I mean, that's really where the Rays have been very thick and tough.
Yeah, I love how you mentioned Souza because he's not getting a lot of love as he should be. But for good reason. I mean, you got Corey Dickerson leading the AL in hits. You got Lomo with, 22 home runs. And so these guys are on a torrid pace to just have the best year of their careers. But all of a sudden, you see Souza in the lower half of that lineup, and he's doing a lot of damage as well. You got Malik Smith, who's hitting the ball well. He's inserted at the top of the order. He's gone in for Kevin Kiermaier, not an easy task. But he's done a lot of good things, especially on the bases. And, you know, they're piecing it together. They're doing a lot of good things on offense to make up for some of the things that we're missing on defense and especially in the bullpen.
And the other piece that the Rays added this week, I think is important, we'll hear from him later, is Trevor Plouffe. He's going to DH today. Kind of a nice veteran to add to the roster and give you some depth.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the reason we brought him in is because obviously we've struggled against left-handers. He has a career over, I think, 260, 270 batting average against left-handed pitchers. So that'll be a good addition there. But also, you said it, Neil. I mean, the guy's a veteran. Anytime you can add a veteran to the clubhouse, a good veteran leader to the clubhouse, takes pressure off of the other veterans. I mean, look, Longoria, you know, obviously he's one of the veteran leaders, but you can't put all the pressure on his shoulders. You got to look to other people as well. And bringing in a good quality guy like Plouffe, you'd never hear any negativity coming out of him. He's always there. He's early in the clubhouse, always working hard, showing the young guys kind of how to do it, almost mentoring in a way. You can never have enough of those guys in your lineup and in that dugout.
Good stuff, Doug. We'll see you later on.
Anytime, Neil.
One Doug Wechter of Fox Sports Sun. We certainly appreciate his time. Before we continue, let's pause for station identification. You're listening to the Rays Baseball Network. Coming up on This Week in Rays Baseball, hear from the newest Rays player in Trevor Plouffe, an all-star in Port Charlotte, and much more right after this on the Rays Baseball Network. We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball. Time to take a look on the minor league side. We head down to Port Charlotte with a guy who just played in his second all-star game. That is Brett Sullivan of the Charlotte Stone Crabs, a catcher. Brett, thanks very much for a few minutes.
Oh, no, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Tell me what it's meant to be in an all-star game the last 2 years, your first two full seasons in professional baseball.
It's been an awesome experience so far. Just being able to participate in those with, you know, what we all consider the best guys in the league at that point, it's been, you know, awesome to compete against them, get to know them, you know, just get to meet all their personalities, see how they are as baseball players, and it's just been an awesome experience so far and been blessed to be a part of both of them.
What's been the biggest difference maybe that you've seen? Obviously, you've succeeded both years, but the difference in level from the Midwest League and low A to high A and the Florida State League?
The biggest difference would probably be pitching. I think in the Florida State League, there's been some unbelievable arms that we've faced who just have, you know, they're throwing upper nines, touching 100, and, you know, you're seeing that on a nightly basis. So that's it's fun, it's a challenge, and, you know, you want to enjoy every moment of it.
How about the adjustment for you? I know you were a conversion guy. You started as an infielder when you were drafted. You moved behind the plate. Where have you grown as a catcher from, let's say, last year to this year?
I think I've grown a lot. I would probably say almost in all areas, as in receiving, blocking, communication with the pitchers, throwing. I just try to just be consistent, I think, is the biggest thing. Instead of having, like, one good day, the next day, you know, you – go to a bad habit. So I just think trying to be consistent every day with my work, I think that's been the key. And I think all areas, blocking, throwing, receiving, it's all just been a little improvement with still a lot of room to grow, but I'm happy where it's at.
Can you tell me what it was like when you were first asked or the thought was, hey, we'd like to see a catch?
Well, they just had, like, mentioned it throughout the year, my first year, and I never thought they would, like, you know, actually do it. But when they did it, I was all for it because I caught along in high school. And I loved being back there, and, you know, as a catcher, you're in every single play, which is awesome. And for my personality, I love it. So I was all in 100%. And then I went to Instructs, and I think they just said, all right, here you go. And I caught, I think, every day, every pitcher, just every drill I had to do. And it was a very good experience. I think it's the best for my career to be back there.
How much did you pick the brain of Wilson Ramos when he was rehabbing with you? Are you a talker? Are you a listener? Are you an ask questions guy? How much did you take advantage of him being there?
I think I'm a big talker and listener. So I was asking him, you know, just like little questions about game calling or what he's thinking on his setup, because he's real smooth back there. And I think if I can just, you know, pick a little thing from, you know, him and be more smooth with my game calling or my receiving or my blocking, it would help me. So I just asked him little questions here and there. He was awesome about it. He gave great feedback and stuff. It was good. It's a good experience that whenever a big leaguer comes down, even if it's a pitcher, because we get to catch him. So we love having him here.
Is there any particular guy that you caught from a pitching standpoint that you really enjoyed or learned a lot from?
I caught Tommy Hunter and Jumbo Diaz.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really talk to them much because, you know, they're trying to get in and get out. But just catching them and seeing what they have, it was awesome. And it just made you want to, you know, work harder and try to get up there as soon as you can to catch them again. So it was a good experience.
Now, I'm sure what got you drafted, and again, we're chatting with Brett Sullivan, is your bat. And you've been very successful. And maybe the most impressive thing is how difficult you are to strike out. Right now, I think you're among the toughest, if not the toughest, in the Florida State League. Is that the way you've always been, a tough guy to strike out? And how much pride do you take in that?
Well, I really didn't realize it this year at all until someone had, like, tweeted it out. But I think I'm just – what goes into it is I'm an aggressive hitter, so I'm swinging very early in the count and looking for something to hit. So that's a part of it. And then once I do get two strikes, I do take pride in putting the ball in play, because, you know, when you put the ball in play, good things can happen. So once I get two strikes, I take a lot of pride in it, and I just try to, you know, get a hit or put the bat on the ball any way I can.
And as a guy who catches, you're also unique in that you're double digits now in stolen bases. How much of the running game is part of your game, and how much does it help to kind of know what to look for from pitchers and also catchers in terms of deciding when to run?
It was always a part of my game, so I knew when I was converted, I talked to some people. I said, hey, I'm going to keep stealing as much as I can. And they kind of, like, laughed about it, and I don't know if they thought I was serious, but I think it's helped being a catcher, because sometimes, like, as catchers, like, we set up differently when we think they're going to steal, or we're more relaxed when we think they're not going to steal. And in different counts, you know, what the pitcher's throwing, what we think he's going to throw, I think it helps I think it all comes first full circle and helps me a lot.
I know you come from a baseball family. Your dad played baseball and football at Sacramento State. Your brother played college baseball with you and is now in the White Sox organization. How often do you talk to your brother, and what would it mean someday to play professionally against him?
We talk every single day. Yeah, every day. Even if it's, you know, if it's before the game, it's usually not about baseball. It's just about whatever's going on out there. And then after the game, we'll give a little feedback to each other. Both of us know each other so well. So if, you know, we're doing good, we, you know, stay with it. If we're doing bad, we maybe give him a little tip here or there. But yeah, we're talking every day, and I would love to play against him. It would be awesome. I had never played against him, like, in a meaningful game before. I've always been on the same team with him, so it'd be interesting to see what it's like.
And I'm sure the biggest challenge being a catcher in the Florida State League is the heat. How are you holding up, and is there anything you did differently to prepare for the season knowing you had to deal with that?
I didn't really know what to expect with how hot it would be, but it's definitely a challenge. I'm bringing three shirts down, a couple pair of socks. So I'm switching in and out of game in the bathroom, switching shirts, switching socks. But, you know, everyone has to do it, so it's a part of the minor league grind, and you just embrace it, and you got to love it.
Well, keep grinding. Continued success. Very happy for you and what you've done so far. And, again, keep doing what you're doing.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
And that is Charlotte Stone Crabs catcher Brett Sullivan, who, along with Brandon Lau and Jake Cronenworth, were Rays representatives in the recently completed Florida State League All-Star Game. Sullivan now hitting .305 with four homers, 40 runs batted in, and 10 steals in 57 games for the Stone Crabs. That, and he's only struck out a total of 21 times in 226 at-bats, rare in this day and age. Back to the majors, where the Rays this week welcome to Fresh Face in former Twins and A's corner infielder Trevor Plouffe. And I asked Plouffe, who was traded from Oakland, what the past week was like.
When I found out I was coming here, I was excited. You know, this has been a team that, you know, I've always, you know, watched from the other side and enjoyed what they've done, kind of the attitude that they bring out to the field. And plus, I was at a time I wasn't sure what was going to happen with me. So when I got the call, you know, I guess the right word would be just excited, you know, happy to be here. And the first week or so has been great.
Tell me what has impressed you during this first week, and was it kind of what you expected watching from afar now that you're part of it?
Yeah, as soon as I got into clubhouse, I just noticed how, tight everybody was, and, there's that feeling that we want to win here every single day. We expect to win every single day, and, I didn't really have that in Oakland, to be honest with you. Were we out there going hard every night? Of course, but there's a different attitude here, everybody has it, and everyone's bought into that mentality, and it's something that, if you want to win this league, you have to have. So that was my first impression, and, we lost the first game, then came back and took the next two and won the series, and that's kind of been our mentality, just win these series and go from there.
You were, before Oakland, always with Minnesota, so you were part of teams that expected to win and maybe didn't. I would think the team that had Torrey Hunter kind of embraced that expect-to-win mentality. Fair to say that similar feeling to what you're going through now?
Yeah, it starts from the top. So, when Torrey came over and he was our clubhouse leader, he preached that every day. Show up to the park every day expecting to win. And, we have a guy like Longo who does that. He's won. Like I said, it starts from there and trickles down. Everyone has to buy into it, and it takes the right person to be able to portray that message to everybody. And I think he's the right guy, and everyone's bought into it, like I said. So it's just a good feeling to show up to the park every day and expecting that and really, really wanting that.
Describe for our fans what kind of player you are and where your strengths are.
Okay. I think I can help the team defensively. I play, third, first base. I can play outfield. I played every single position on the field except for center, pitcher, and catcher. So I can play all over, but mainly I play third and first. I think I'll be able to, give some of our guys days off in that regard. Let Longo, stay fresh all season long, and same with Lomo. On the offensive side of the ball, I can drive the ball. I've been a run producer in years past. I can hit the ball to the park when I get a mistake, and I like to put together good at bats. So I try to prepare myself and be a well-rounded baseball player, not just a single element type of guy. But try to help in any way I can, whether it be showing up with a positive attitude and rallying the boys. It just depends on the day, but I want to help the team win any way I can.
I think what the fans fail to realize sometimes is the human aspect of this game. And we always say, happy wife, happy life. How challenging has it been just to go cross-country with your family? You've got a young child. You've got a second one on the way, too.
Yeah, that's, it was tough. And we've never had to experience this, I was in Minnesota for a long time. We knew where we were going to be. We knew exactly where we wanted to live. And we had it all planned out. But, this is one of those situations that's just part of the game. And, it has been tough, moving everybody here, especially with a young child. But, she's great with it. She helps so much. And, I think that she deserves most of the credit for getting it done. it was tough. But, we're happy. We're happy to be here and to, be in the big leagues. It's a blessing. Every day is.
That is Trevor Plouffe, who in his first week with the Rays had hits in his first three games that he played, including a home run on Wednesday in the series finale against the Cincinnati Reds. And we'll see if maybe he can do that today in a series finale to help the Rays take this one against the Baltimore Orioles. Plouffe is the DH this afternoon. We certainly wish Trevor, his wife Olivia, and son Teddy the best in getting acclimated to Tampa Bay. Now, after today, the Rays only have four more home games before the All-Star break. So while the Rays are on the road, you could visit the Art of the Brick exhibit, which is free and open this past weekend in Tampa. The artist of the exhibit, Nathan Sawaya, threw out a first pitch on Wednesday, a baseball made of Lego bricks. And I asked Nathan what that meant to him.
This is a dream come true for me. As a sports fan, something like this is pretty phenomenal. And to throw out a first pitch made out of my childhood toy, Lego bricks, my art medium of choice, that's pretty special. I think it might be Major League Baseball history. I can't think of another ceremonial first pitch made out of Lego before.
Now, tell me what kind of fan you were growing up, and what are your best memories of the game?
Well, I played Little League up until a certain point when it was beyond me. So I was always a fan. In fact, when I had my little Lego city growing up, I built a diamond, of course, so that I could have baseball happening in my Lego city. And now I've gone on to take Lego in a different direction, really. From that little Lego city I had growing up, now I take Lego into an art medium, making large-scale sculptures out of this toy from my childhood.
Which, real neat, and I'm sure our fans will enjoy it. Give us an idea what fans will see, what's incorporated into the exhibit itself.
Well, there's over 120 works of art, all made out of Lego bricks. So it's a big exhibition. It spans a lot of my career, because I've been doing this for 10 years, and you're going to see all sorts of artwork built out of a childhood toy, Lego bricks. So you're going to see some very surreal pieces, some human forms, some very whimsical pieces. I mean, there's something there for the whole family. There's just a lot to see.
The baseball itself, how long does that take to build, and how long do most of the others take to also build with obviously all the art involved?
Well, when I'm doing a life-size human form, which a lot of the sculptures are, that takes 2 to 3 weeks. I'm using 15, 20,000 bricks. Now, something like a baseball, this baseball is weighs 5 ounces, so it's almost the same weight and size as an actual baseball. I can do this under an hour. It only has a few hundred pieces.
And I guess the question is, how long would it take you to build your own little mini Tropicana field?
Build the Trop, life-size? I don't know about life-size, but...
More human form, I guess. More,
yeah, if you did, like, a little mini Trop, I think you could probably do that in, you know, a couple days, a couple weeks. It just depends on how much detail you want to put into a sculpture. Now, I'm actually gluing all my Lego bricks together as I'm working because I want to make sure the sculptures, you know, stay together. So that's it is a slow process.
And I think the neat part about this is it's for 6 weeks or longer than that, closer to 8-10 weeks in the Tampa Bay area, and it's free for people who attend.
Yeah, it goes through September 4th. It's at 802 East Whiting Street, and it is free. And so everyone can come down, bring the whole family, and check out some artwork that I think is something that a lot of people can relate to. Because if you see a marble statue, you can appreciate it, but not a lot of people use marble these days. But people have Lego bricks, they know it, so they can really connect with this type of art.
And to also just get back to your, you know, your baseball connection.
Sure, yeah.
What kind of fan were you in terms of the actual game, the Major League game? Did you go to a lot of games as a kid too?
I did. I grew up in Oregon, so it was tough. There's not a lot of ballparks there, of course. So my father would drive me up to the Mariners game in the Kingdome. That my first baseball games were in the Kingdome back then, and we'd go up a lot, as much as we could find time to.
And the art, what the inspiration for this, and what are you hoping that fans who come to your exhibit get out of it?
Well, I think as an artist, my role is to inspire folks. So I hope that when people come and they see the exhibition, they get inspired. We have some Lego bricks at the very end of the exhibition. So if you want to, and I know a lot of kids will, they'll want to jump in and build something right there. Probably some adults will want to jump in and build something. But as an artist, I want to inspire, and I hope people find some creativity out of this.
And thanks to one Nathan Sawaya for joining us. You can visit Art of the Brick on Whiting Street in Tampa between now and September 4th. It is free. And again, the Rays are on the road after the game for the next week and a half and just 4 games at home between now and actually the third week of July. Now back to Major League Baseball. Joining us to talk about the Rays opponent and the American League East is one Rich Dubroff. He covers the Orioles and has for quite some time for PressBox Online, most recently and formerly of CSN. Rich, thanks very much for joining us. Tell me how surprised you are about the Orioles pitching staff, because watching them in spring training, I actually thought they had pretty good depth.
Well, you know, Neil, I thought that they had pretty good depth too, but everybody's focused on the struggles of the pitchers, and they should be, because they've been historically bad. But the big-name hitters aren't hitting as well as they should. If you look at all the bold-faced names, Chris Davis, who's now out, Manny Machado, Mark Trumbo, Adam Jones, all of them, their statistics are well below where they were a year ago at this time. And while it is the pitching, most of it, the hitting hasn't been great either.
J.J. Hardy is another name who, look, he's valuable defensively, but he wasn't having a really good offensive season. But still, I mean, you look, they're what, near the top of the league in hitting, near the top of the league in hitting with runners in scoring position. So even with that, they're still getting a lot of production.
They are getting a lot of production, but they aren't outproducing the pitching, unfortunately. But the pitching just has to get a lot better and a lot quicker before it's time to make some important decisions, Neil.
And I think, you know, that's something I want to get to. I mean, can it? You know, you went into this season thinking, okay, there were a lot of options, but then Chris Tillman gets hurt, and he starts today, and he's not been the same guy. And Ubaldo Jimenez, who we saw Friday, has not been the same guy. And Kevin Gausman, who we won't see, has been kind of a mess. I mean, when Dylan Bundy's your most consistent starter, that kind of is an issue because he hasn't thrown more than 110 innings.
No, he hasn't, and he's getting up to that that innings limit. And what's going to happen is the Orioles are going to start backing off on him a little bit as we get to the All-Star break, because they want to make sure that he's healthy to pitch all season long. But coming into the season, I thought that they needed big years from Bundy, Tillman, and Gausman. If they had big years from those three, then there'd be something to talk about. They haven't had big years from all three, and they're hurting.
So the question is, do they have options on the farm? Do they have, I mean, I know they have some kids that they liked for a while. Is there anyone there who can step up into the rotation, like a Chris Lee, for instance, and help out?
Well, Chris Lee is somebody that they were really intrigued about. And, you know, he showed them something in spring training. But they also thought that they needed to send him down to AAA for, you know, much of the year, maybe the entire year, to learn. And he struggled a bit at AAA, and they haven't brought him up. They've brought up just about everybody else they had. You know, some of them have done okay. Alec Asher, who is from near this area, did well at times. He did well mainly in the bullpen as a sort of come-to-the-rescue guy. And then when he went into the rotation for Ubaldo Jimenez, he struggled, and they brought him out of the rotation, put Jimenez back in, and Asher has now struggled in the bullpen. So it's been a difficult time. They found a couple of pitchers who have done okay. Richard Bleier, who I know you saw with the Yankees last year, has pitched well. They thought Mike Wright was going to be a good bullpen pitcher. They started him at AAA this year, and he was starting. And then when they brought him up here, a few weeks ago, they put him in the bullpen, and they thought they had something. But now Wright's on the disabled list with an injury. So it's been a hard year for them.
So tell me, what do you think happens? I mean, can they play their way out of this? It's not like they're that far from the Yankees and Red Sox. I mean, two good weeks would get you back into the race, but two more bad weeks, and you're looking at the end of the season.
Yeah, you certainly are, Neil. But I didn't see that. I certainly didn't see this coming. I certainly didn't see them having this historically bad streak. But I really didn't think that they were playing, that they were capable of being 22-10 either at the beginning of the season. So maybe they were playing a little bit over their heads for the first 5 weeks of the season. I think the important thing is, how do they do from, let's say, from here to the All-Star break? Do they get back into the race? Do they implode? Or the big question is, what if they sort of tread water in the next couple of weeks? Then they have a real hard decision, because then if they're within a couple of games of 500, they have to decide whether they're going to be aggressive and try and build something here.
And what's your feeling on that? Because, look, you've got contracts coming up for Buck Showalter, Dan Duquette. It's been well documented. It's been a happy marriage at times and a not-so-happy marriage at times.
It certainly has. The important questions are, do you go and do a total rebuild if things fall apart? They have one of the best players in baseball, Manny Machado, whose contract's up next year, and he could be a record-setting free agent. Are they going to make a real effort to sign him, or would they try and sell him off now? Same with Zach Britton. Adam Jones's contract's up at the end of next year. But they have a couple of assets that they could try and peddle now if they wanted. Wellington Castillo, who may be their only All-Star representative, is having a pretty good year. He has a player option for next year. He would be very attractive, I think, on the trade market for a team looking for a good catcher for the second half of the season. Other guys, not so much. Hyunsoo Kim and Seth Smith are both going to be free agents, but I don't know that they have huge value on the market. And as we've talked about, Chris Tillman has had his struggles, and his value is much, much lower than it's been.
And one of the biggest issues, I think, that we've seen, we saw it last year with Chapman and Miller getting traded, and the value that they provided is really, at the deadline, it seems bullpen arms are what provide sometimes the greatest value in return, because how they can help you in a playoff series. And Zach Britton's not healthy, and Darren O'Day's just back, and I don't know whether they even want to consider dealing either of those two guys or Brad Brock at the deadline, where they may get the most value.
Well, I think that Brad Brock would have a lot of value because he has a year and a half, and he's at a much lower salary level than Zach Britton, because he hasn't been a closer until now when he's subbed for Britton. But Brock is a guy who they may want to hang on to, because if they're not going to re-sign Zach Britton because he's so expensive, maybe Brock would end up being a little cheaper value, because they're around the same, they're around the same age, and he's certainly proven that he could be a major league closer.
What's your best guess as to the way this is going to play out, you think, for the Orioles?
They have never been sellers in the Duquette era. 2 years ago, 2015, they were right around 500 at the trading deadline. They went out and they got Gerardo Parra for a young pitcher named Zach Davies, who's now pitching for the Milwaukee Brewers. They ended up the season at 500. Para didn't help him much. They didn't re-sign him. But I think that's about as instructive as you can get. I don't know if Duquette has it in him to be a seller because, as you mentioned, who knows if he's going to be here beyond 2018. So it's a very, very hard – it's going to be very hard because, as you know from covering the Rays, it's rebuilds are very, very difficult. They're difficult to sell to the fans. They're difficult, you know, to watch. If you trade Manny Machado, do you really want to watch Joe Schmo play third base?
And the Rays have kind of rebuilt while also trying to stay as competitive as possible. What's your take on the East right now? I mean, you've gotten to see some of the teams a fair amount.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a lot of the Red Sox and a lot of the Yankees. Not as much, of course, yet the Rays. We've seen the Blue Jays. I'm a little surprised at the Blue Jays' struggles. I thought the Blue Jays would be much, much better than this. And, of course, like a lot of people, I didn't see the Yankees doing this well. And then nobody saw, you know, Aaron Judge coming to be what he is. But I would think that despite all their issues, the Red Sox have to be the team to look at for the second half because they're always going to be aggressive at the trade deadline. And they picked up Doug Fister, who's a pitcher that intrigued the Orioles. So that was a little surprising that happened this weekend.
Good stuff, Rich. We'll be following you, and also we'll be following this AL East race, which certainly is going to be interesting in the next few months.
Thanks very much for having me, Neil. I appreciate it.
And that is Rich Dubroff. We thank him and all of our guests on the program today, including right-handed pitcher Jake Faria, Fox Sports Suns' Doug Wechter, of course, the newest member of the Rays and Trevor Plouffe, Brett Sullivan, an all-star right now with the Charlotte Stonecrabs and artist Nathan Sawaya. Hey, kids, Evan Longoria wants you to read your way to the ballpark this summer through the Reading with the Rays program, presented by Suncoast Credit Union. Kids will receive prizes for reading and receive two tickets to a Rays game for completing the program. Now, you can sign up by visiting your local library. For more information, all you have to do is visit RaysBaseball.com/reading. If you ever have something you'd like to hear on This Week in Rays Baseball, all you have to do is tweet me at Neil Solons. For my producer, Len Martez, this has been This Week in Rays Baseball. Next week, Colby Rasmus and much more. Thanks for joining us on the Rays Baseball Network.